I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly. Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. Marisa is on maternity leave, so today I'm with my first guest co-host, Dan Call, my husband, sous chef, and Local Mouthful's own audio editor. Thanks for joining me, honey.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You know, you've edited every show we've had, so I know you're just dying to be on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, you know, for 187 episodes or 78 episodes, I've been angling to get on this side of the microphone. And
now you'll see it's harder than you think it is.
So this week we're talking about Joy's salad project, my frittata method, and supermarkets. But first, let's talk about something we read this week.
So I spied a story in NPR's The Salt, and it was all about gardening.
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot of gardening. We try to grow herbs. We don't have a lot of space in our little concrete backyard, but I was pleased to read this. There's a couple in Florida who had been gardening in their front yard, vegetables and such, for 17 years. And 6 years ago, the area where they live passed a local ordinance against residential vegetable gardening.
Front yard gardening, that was the problem.
Okay. They had to tear the whole thing out. And they've been fighting ever since to get that law overturned. And recently, Florida state legislature passed a law basically prohibiting local governments from passing laws against front yard or residential vegetable gardening.
The thing that really got me was the idea that it was unsightly to have vegetables growing in your front yard. I mean, what could be more beautiful than fresh crops, big bunches of Swiss chard, herbs? I think it's all very pretty. It's just so weirdly subjective, right? I mean, Do you understand why people might think it's ugly?
I understand why other people might think it's ugly. I personally don't think it's ugly at all. To me, lawns are, while visually appealing, perhaps, are a total waste of all fossil fuels and all kinds of other things. And vegetable gardening, like you say, it's like when I see vegetables growing in a garden, I'm like, that looks good.
Right. Tomatoes, what could be prettier than tomatoes?
I can visualize in my mind an unkempt vegetable garden in an otherwise like well-manicured neighborhood and the neighbors thinking that they don't like the way that looks, but that's not my feeling.
Another interesting point in the article was that the vegetables were in the front garden because that's where they got the sun. You know, you need to have a certain amount of sun in order to successfully grow vegetables, and the backyard was shaded. So it's not like she was trying to make some kind of statement or to annoy her neighbors. It's just what she needed to do to grow the food that she needed. And it's just so crazy that some dumb local ordinance could prevent that.
Well, not anymore.
I wonder what our rules are in the greater Philadelphia area.
I don't know. I mean, at least in South Philly where we live, it's not really an issue because your front yard is the sidewalk
but
and your backyard is...
Some people do grow food and pot it in containers out front of their house. You've seen it, right?
Yes. That's actually what I was thinking of when I said the unkempt vegetable garden, because the one I'm thinking of is... I'm sure that it's productive, but it doesn't look great on the sidewalk. But that's kind of a different story than...
Is it the one on Passyunk that you're thinking of?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't bother me.
Okay.
And I have... The sun is better in the front of our house as well, so we would probably have more luck growing stuff in pots out front than we do out back.
Maybe. But like I said, we're only allowed to use the sidewalk that is as far in front of the house as our steps are, so it's not a lot of space.
Yeah, well, you know, Dan works for the streets department, so you would probably know better than the average person what the rules are.
We do. A lot of people grow stuff on their roofs. I mean, not a lot, but
some.
We've seen pretty productive vegetable and other gardens on rooftops.
I like the idea of gardening, but I don't want to garden, as you well know.
Yeah.
You think you want to garden, but you don't actually want to garden.
Maybe that's true. That's why we have sage growing wild in the backyard.
Well, of course, as always, we'll link to this article in the show notes. And in the comments, please tell us about your own garden. Are you growing food out front? Do you have a garden out back? What would you think if your neighbors suddenly had a big cabbage patch in the front yard? Come to localmouthful.com and let us know what you think. So let's talk about what's for dinner. One thing that we've been having for dinner a lot around my house is shaking tofu. It's a recipe from Vietnamese Food Any Day from Andrea Nguyen, which we've talked about on this podcast before. But this recipe in particular has become a staple. Do you like it, Dan?
I do. I have to confess, I thought it was shaken tofu all this time.
Like shaken baked chicken?
No, like shaken with an E-N at the end, like you have shaken it.
Oh, no. It's shaking. I don't know what that refers to, but it's a vegetarian riff on a classic Vietnamese dish called shaking beef. I think it has to do with the seasonings, the flavorings. You make a sauce that has mirin and soy sauce and sugar. You brown your tofu in some oil, and then at the very end, you sort of glaze it in this delicious, salty, sweet, savory sauce. And basically, you serve it over a big salad. I think at first, you were resistant to this dish because you thought it was something else. Like, I think the first time I made it, I served it with rice as well. And so you didn't quite get what the dish is. But what the dish is it basically is a salad with cooked tofu on it.
Yes. In that form, I like it a lot.
Yeah. That's how you're supposed to do it. That when you get to that point, then you realize it's sort of like not trying to be a stir fry or like something that you serve with rice. It's a tofu salad. And it's really, really good and very easy. If you have the book, you should definitely give it a go. I've been making it probably once a week. But I also wanted to talk about salads in general because we've been having a lot of salads for dinner.
Yeah, well, there's one thing I want to say about the shaking tofu, which is I think that part of the reason it's good is just because the writer of that book, Andrea
Nguyen,
she's very good.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah. She's award-winning. She's written, I don't know, more than a dozen cookbooks. I have an interview coming out with her in my other podcast, Edible Potluck. So I'll try to include that in the newsletter when it becomes live. So you can all listen to that. And I also wrote about her book for Edible Communities. I'll link to that as well. But it is just one of the many dinner salads I've been making as part of my Summer of Salads project that I've kicked off on Instagram and in my newsletter. Because I realize that we've fallen into a little bit of a salad rut around here. We typically make the same salad. And, you know, by we, I mean me. You don't make a whole lot of salads. But we do the same. Same salad. Like I do, you know what I do? Shallots. Mm-hmm. I sprinkle my shallots with a little salt and sugar and vinegar so they sort of like mellow and become sweet and salty. And then just a very basic vinaigrette, tons of chopped farmer's market lettuces, and then cherry tomatoes, sometimes croutons, sometimes toasted nuts, sometimes cheese. And then we serve it with a big pile of roasted potatoes. That's been our salad dinner for eons.
Yeah, well, now that you're talking about it, that sounds perfectly delicious. And no wonder.
There's nothing wrong with it, but there's a big world of salads out there, like the shaking tofu.
Yeah.
That's a really great addition, and it mixes things up a little bit. So I've basically just been experimenting. I did a delicious sort of Moroccan-leaning carrot salad, which you loved.
Yes.
It's got a dressing with pomegranate molasses topped with pistachios. Last night we did a fennel salad with orange segments, olives, and what else was in that salad? Oh, red onion.
Yeah.
And that was quite tasty. So I'm looking at what we have around the house today, and I'm thinking there might be a panzanella in our future, which is a tomato and bread salad. We love that, but we haven't had it in a long, long time.
Do we have any more carrots?
A few, not enough to make the carrot salad again.
That was my clear favorite of
so far.
The first round of summer salads.
So I've been tagging my photos of salads on Instagram, The Joy of Salads, and I've also been doing a salad-themed newsletter once a week, which I intend to do through the end of the summer. So it'll be a 15-week series all in all. And it's really been inspiring me to try some new things, which I sorely needed. Is there anything you're hoping that I'll make?
For summer of salads?
Yeah. Do you have any favorite salads that you think
we should... not exactly the season for it, but I always like your grain salads.
Oh, yeah. Grain salads are delicious.
Like farro and, to a lesser extent, quinoa.
Mm-hmm. You know, we could use those wheat berries that we're going to talk a little bit about wheat berries later, but they would be a great base for a grain salad as well.
Yeah, good idea.
I think. Well, so please come join me in my salad exploration. Tag your own salads, The Joy of Salads, so that I can see them. And let's all just make and eat more salads. It's that time of year. So since you're here, Dan, I thought... You don't do a lot of cooking around our house, but there are certain things that you make.
Yeah, it depends on how you define cooking. There's a lot of labor that goes into making stuff. And I do, when I'm around, obviously you work at home, so I'm not around to, you know, help with lunch or mostly with dinner either, but I...
I did call you my sous chef in the intro.
You did last night compliment me on my knife skills, so I do help out where possible.
Yeah.
One thing that I've always made, even from before we met, was frittata.
Right, and I thought we could go over in our how to make that segment. So talk us through it.
Okay. Well, for a long time, I made them just like most of the recipes you see online tell you to make them. You basically put all your vegetables in a pan. You add them in reverse order of how long they take to cook. So if you have like a root vegetable, like normally potatoes, you put that in first, you cook them. And then when you think they're far enough along, you add onions or whatever. And then, you know, eggs. And then you cook it on the stovetop for a little while. And then you put it in the oven. And that's mostly the way I do it now. But what I'll do to get all of the component ingredients perfectly cooked now is cook an ingredient till it's done and then take it out of the pan entirely.
Let's talk about the pan. What is your preferred skillet for making frittata?
It's that cast iron one that my mom gave us a while ago. It's a 10-inch. I think it's not a Lodge cast iron. It's like an old brand that doesn't exist anymore.
Is it Griswold?
I think it's Wagner.
It's smooth. It has a perfectly smooth surface.
It's our best cast iron pan. It's a little small for ideal frittata making, but that's okay.
I think it's perfect for our family of two, though.
Maybe.
So how much olive oil are you? And do you use olive oil as opposed to other possible fats?
I do use olive oil. I do sneak olive oil in when you're not looking because I know that you like to be a little more parsimonious with it than I am. But when you're cooking in cast iron, it really helps get it out. And obviously, it tastes better.
So how much do you start with, would you say, about?
Just enough to kind of very shallowly fry the potatoes because you really don't want them to stick. And a brown potato is, I think, the first building block of a great frittata.
How do you cut your potato?
I used to cut them. It's very laborious, but I would cube them into like half-inch cubes. These days, I kind of quarter the potato and then slice it so you have little triangles.
And then
cook them. You cook them on one side till they're brown and then flip them over to the other side, brown them on the other side. Take them out of the pan entirely. Then you cook your more delicate vegetables like onions and whatever else you have around the house.
Any specific potato that you have to have?
We usually have Yukon Golds on hand or some other kind of more waxy than starchy potato.
Okay, so your potatoes are cooked and you remove them from the pan and set them aside.
Right.
And do you add more oil?
Usually, yes.
Okay. Now what happens next?
You cook your onions and sometimes we'll have like the stems of some other vegetable like kale stems or garlic scapes. Anything that's basically cooks about the same amount of time that an onion cooks. Cook all that stuff, season it up, and then when you're ready, add the potatoes back to the pan. Warm them up for like 30 seconds. Then you add your whisked eggs and any herbs. I usually combine the eggs and the herbs in a bowl, whisk them up, and then they're the last thing that gets added.
How many eggs do you use for the 10-inch skillet?
For the two of us, we usually two eggs per person. So I use four. If it's the only thing we're having for dinner and we're not having like a little salad or whatever, maybe I'll use five. Or if they're eggs, if we get our eggs from Primal Supply and they're not always
the same
exactly
size.
Exactly the same size. So if they're a little smaller, I'll use five.
So what about, you mentioned herbs. What are your favorite frittata herbs?
I really like chives, but we don't really have them around very often. We actually have a chive plant growing in the backyard, but it's kind of gone wild.
It's because you don't garden.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, so chives, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, any green herb that you like, basil, and have on hand, basil, parsley.
What about garlic? When I get involved, I like to press a garlic clove into the eggs.
Yeah, I think that I usually do that. I just didn't mention it because it's like just such a standard part of the prep for me.
What about cheese?
Any kind of cheese you have on hand. That goes on last.
Okay, so you have it over what kind of heat on the stovetop?
I mean, it's kind of a meaningless term, but I would say medium-high. Medium. We have induction, so it's a little hard to translate that to a regular electric or gas.
I agree. Medium high is right. And then what are we looking for before we transfer it to the oven?
You basically want to cook it halfway from the bottom of the pan up.
How do you test for that?
You kind of tilt the pan to the side and kind of look down and see where the cooked part is.
And when we say oven, really we're putting it under the broiler.
Yeah. We have one of those little fancy toaster ovens. And basically half, you cook it halfway on the stovetop, maybe 4 minutes after you add the eggs, 4 or 5 minutes, and then another 3 or 4 or 5 minutes in the broiler.
And how do you know when it's done?
I've always just kind of winged it on that. Sometimes it comes out, ours comes out a little overdone, but that's better. In my mind, that's better than underdone. You might say the opposite.
What about resting? Do you have to let it rest before you dive in?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get it out of the pan if it rests a little bit and contracts and kind of shrinks away from the size of the pan.
How long?
Like 5 minutes.
Okay. Now let's talk about hot room temperature or cold. What's your preferred way to enjoy it?
However.
I really like it cooled, like at room temperature. We eat it hot a lot because we're hungry and it's dinner time, but I always love when it's left over having it the next day.
Yeah, it's not, by the time you rest it and cut it and, you know, you do up your salad or whatever, it's not hot. I wouldn't say it's hot. It's like above room temperature. But it definitely makes a good cold sandwich or cold breakfast the next day too.
You're usually at work when I do this, but I love a slice of crusty toasted lost bread with a layer of mayonnaise and mustard
on
it.
You can stop right there, actually.
Because
lost bread and mayonnaise.
And then I like to slice the frittata thin and put it on top. And it's the most delicious little open-faced sandwich that I have in your absence. But
yeah, I've approximated that a few times.
Well, you don't have a toaster oven at work.
No, and I don't have like a jar of mayonnaise.
True. Anyway, so that's Dan's frittata method. I don't know if we've ever recorded this in a recipe, but we should.
I don't think so. I mean, frittata is one of those things that the recipe is kind of just a set of guidelines. It's like as long as you cook the eggs properly and the overall proportions of eggs to other stuff is good, it's probably going to be good. It's good for, we'll have it and we'll call it refrigerator clean out frittata because
it accepts all your lingering ingredients. Well, thanks, Dan. I hope that you're inspired to go make a frittata now. I would like to say that I am, but I think I'm just going to let you keep making them.
Yeah, well, I have to have one thing that I can do.
Now, let's move on to our wild card topic. We want to talk about supermarkets, which has been on our mind a lot lately.
Yeah.
Do you want to say why?
Sure. I do most of the shopping because it's been more convenient. I work in Center City and there are quite a few grocery stores and grocery stands within like a few blocks of my office. So I'll go out on my lunch break and go grocery shopping, come back and bring it home. But I recently stopped going to our main grocery store because they have a habit of not asking impolite dog owners to leave the store, which dogs are not allowed in grocery stores in Philadelphia or I'm guessing most other places because they're, unless they are service dogs, which obviously that's fine. And so for some reason, most places don't have a problem keeping dog owners out of, and their dogs out of the store, but this one does. So I stopped going there.
Which puts us in the situation of trying new grocery stores, looking for a new place to shop.
Right. Which has been fun. It's been mostly a matter of revisiting old grocery stores. Like we went to Essene, which is a kind of an institution in Philadelphia. It's been around for dozens of years. I don't actually know how many years.
I think more than 20 years. It's really an old school health food store.
Yeah.
You know, when the health food store was kind of like a hippie weird place that was not Whole Foods and, you know, has a big bulk food section. Mm-hmm. You can buy its supplements there and new age health books. Like they have a big Japanese section, information on macrobiotics. I love that stuff.
Yeah, and we hadn't been there, and we still, that used to be our neighborhood. We used to live down the street, so we were there once a week, but since then, hardly at all. And we've been shopping more farmers markets.
Well, yeah, it is the summer, so we have plenty of markets at our disposal. We went back to Head House for the first time in a long time.
Yep, that was fun and delicious.
Yeah, and we've decided that's going to be like an every week. We're going to go to Essene and the Head House Farmers Market every week for our shopping needs. And that goes a long way, but the Essene produce section is severely limited. For example, we were making a chili last weekend, and they didn't have the Anaheim peppers that we needed.
Yeah, and of all places, we found a bounty of Anaheim peppers at Acme, which I was not really expecting.
You know, I don't love Acme, but they do have – their produce section just has more square feet than the Essene. The Essene produce section is really small.
Yeah, I mean, the whole store is small. It's like two row houses put together.
So – anyway, that's like a thing that I like in a store is I need to have a better produce section. I mean, I think Essene is going to meet some of our needs, but it's not going to meet all of our needs.
Yeah. I mean, right now that produce is not a problem with Head House Market in the summer. So basically anything we want is available.
Another stumbling block we hit at grocery venues is over packaging. You know, you love to go to Reading Terminal Market, which is close to your work and a wonderful place to shop. And Iovines has tons of produce, like all the produce really you could want. That's, they have everything.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is over packaged.
Yeah.
Can you describe their Anaheims?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you've probably seen something like this in your local grocery store, but they will put one or two hot chili peppers on a styrofoam backing and wrap it in plastic. And you just don't need that.
Right.
And they have like, they have the widest variety of chili peppers that I think I've seen in the city anywhere, but I really don't buy them there unless I can't find them anywhere else. Or if you need them for a recipe project, I'll do that.
We also really like to have a big bulk section because we like minimizing packaging in general. And the most spectacular one I've seen in the Philadelphia area is at Weaver's Way. I went there without you, but you have got to go. It's an entire floor dedicated to bulk everything from soap to nuts, you know, to cereals and snacks, grains, sugar, flour, everything. It's really incredible. You've got to see it.
Well, I'm hoping to. We're planning a field trip to go there and a couple other places soon.
Mm-hmm. We have to make a special trip because it is like a 30-minute drive from our house. Every once in a while, I think it would be worth a trip.
It is out near your sister's house, so we can combine trips sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. You know who else has a great produce or a great bulk section? River Wards. You have been there. That's in Fishtown.
I don't recall their bulk section.
Yeah, they have a really good bulk section. But River Wards is not, in addition to being not close, it's impossible to park around there. So, I mean, it's complicated. I've said this to you many times. We should just get in the car and go to New Jersey once in a while and go to Wegmans. But you're very against that.
Well, I just don't think it's necessary. We have quite a few great stores around us. We just need to find out where to get the individual things that we need.
I think Marisa goes to Wegmans once a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So does my friend Anna also makes regular grocery runs to New Jersey. Maybe, I don't know. We're not there yet, but maybe we'll get there. Or maybe the South Philly Co-op will open soon, and that will be incredible, and that will be our main place that we get groceries.
Yeah. We are members of the co-op.
And have been for 5 years.
The word is.
It takes a long time. The Kensington co-op just opened after 10 years of planning.
Oh, my God. How long has it been?
5 years.
Okay.
So we'll see. If you all have tips on streamlining your grocery life or great places to shop, please let us know because we could use the help. We're piecing it together at this point, which can be fun or can be a chore depending on how you look at it. So let's close with what we're loving this week. Do you want to tell everyone what it is?
Sure. Well, for me, it's the oats from Morganics Family Farm, which is a vendor at Head House Market. They have a farm in North Jersey near Flemington, I think. They sell oats. They do dry beans. We haven't had their dried beans, but they advertise that. I don't know. Have you seen them at the market selling dried beans?
I haven't, but we'll check when we go later this week.
Anyway, the thing that we've been loving is their oats. We had bought oats from them last year that I had used to make muesli mostly and bake with. This year we went back, as you said, after we quit our grocery store, we were like, let's check out Head House again. So we went back there, bought oats for the first time this season. And although we had had them before, we never had made them as like breakfast oats, just a bowl of cereal. And we did that for the first time last week. And they're stupendous.
In the simplest possible way, just boiling the oats in water. No milk, no fat, nothing. Just boiled
water
in water.
And,
they're very good. They taste fresher. They have an oatier flavor. I have been thinking we could probably toast them lightly before we boil them, which would make them more flavorful.
Okay.
But it is, I mean, weekday mornings, we want to keep it simple. I want to keep it simple. I don't need to be doing like culinary machinations over my pot of oats in the morning.
Yeah. And I mean, with these, you don't need to. They're basically great the way they are.
So
they do. One of the reasons they're so great is they grind them right before they come to the market.
Mm-hmm. Steam them. They roll them.
Yeah, they roll them. So they don't grind them. So I actually have noticed that when we bought them the first week, we made oats with them the following day or the following morning, and they were really great then. And I think we made them maybe twice since then.
We had them just this morning.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And maybe it's just that was the first time we had had them for oats as oats for breakfast, and they were especially delicious because they were something new. But I think maybe they will not return to the peak of flavor they were at the day after they rolled them.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
I haven't noticed a drop off in quality. I think they still taste fresh and delicious, but I think they're wonderful. I wanted to talk about just loving whole, like, local grains in general. You know, I'm also obsessed with the Pasta Lab pasta, which the Pasta Lab is a company here that makes pasta from freshly milled local grains, and I could not be more crazy about it. You know, we have dried whole wheat pasta in the pantry all the time, and I do like it. It's very good. But these whole grain pastas are just the texture is more delicate and delicious. The flavor is very robust. I think I love them more than you love them. But I think part of what keeps you from loving them as much as I do is they are a little pricey.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, we're kind of spoiled for great pasta around here, from restaurants at least. And I'm comparing it to, you know, Joey Baldino's pasta at Zeppoli, for example.
That's white flour pasta, though.
I know. It's more delicious by its nature, but...
This is a really nutritious product, so...
It definitely doesn't taste nutritious. It tastes very good.
Right. It doesn't... That's what I'm saying. You have to compare it to the whole wheat, the dried whole wheat, because that's what it's like as a... That's really what it's replacing for us.
Okay. Yeah, when you put it that way. I will say that it's definitely... It has inspired you to... make your own pasta from you haven't actually done it yet.
No.
But you were planning on, well, you've ground grains.
I did.
Whole,
I bought
whole wheat grains that you got
wheat berries from Organics, and mm-hmm. I used just our blender to make a flour, and I made some pancakes with them.
Yeah, and they were very good.
They were pretty good.
And you're
going
to make pasta the same way.
I didn't know that. I didn't know I was going to make pasta with
that. You said
that.
You were going to.
Well, the thing with making pasta is you have to sift it. You know, you have to sift the biggest pieces of bran out if you want a smooth result.
Okay. Well, I think we can handle that.
Well, that might be a project for another season of our lives, but maybe you can take that on as your project and you can make homemade pasta.
We have made homemade pasta before.
Right.
And it does, even with, like, you know, King Arthur flour from the grocery store, it turns out fabulous. So.
Well, anytime you want to make homemade pasta from local grains that you mill here, please be my guest. I would love that.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for co-hosting with me, Dan. It's been a delight to have you here. And I'm sure our listeners are happy to, you know, quote unquote, meet you after us referencing you for all this time.
Yeah, I feel like they've heard enough about me.
Well, Dan is just the first in a series of co-hosts that I'll have while Marisa is on maternity leave. If you have topics you'd like me to talk about, please send them along to me at joy@localmouthful. Or if you have ideas for people that would make tremendous co-hosts, tell me. I need all the help I can get while I'm doing this, while Marisa spends some much-needed time with her new babies and husband. And that's it for today's episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.